Our last case this, oh, you'll notice that we have a visiting judge here also for Justice Stewart, who's recused from this case, State of Ohio versus Sharon D. Phipps, 2018-1778. Our visiting judge is Judge Lisa Sadler from the 10th District. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you.
All right, for the appellant, Ms. Mullen.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, Catherine Mullen on behalf of appellant, State of Ohio. I am joined at the table by my amicus counsel, the Ohio Attorney General's Office, who will be sharing time with me this morning. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Your Honors, it is universally accepted that the jury or the trial court where there is no jury is the sole judge of the credibility of witnesses and of the weight to be given to their testimony. That is a direct quote from this court. Recognizing this fundamental truth, the Ohio Constitution, the Ohio General Assembly, and this court have limited a reviewing court's authority when it comes to a manifest weight review. In State versus Phipps, the 8th District Court of Appeals chose to disregard this court's longstanding precedent, the Ohio Constitution, and the Ohio General Assembly when it modified a conviction following a reversal for manifest weight. The appropriate remedy, the only appropriate remedy in this case, is a new trial. This court should reverse the decision of the lower court and remand to the trial court for the new trial that should have been ordered. Now, turning to why that is, this court in State versus Tompkins evaluated what the United States Supreme Court said in Tibbs, and it accepted Tibbs's distinctions between sufficiency and manifest weight. They are qualitatively and quantitatively different, is what this court said. Sufficiency is a review for adequacy, constitutional adequacy. And if there is a conviction that is not supported by sufficient evidence, those convictions are subject to reversal, which is an acquittal, and double jeopardy would apply. In those situations where the state has failed to prove by sufficient evidence one of its counts, a reviewing court may modify that conviction to a lesser offense. That same ability does not exist in manifest weight. And that is because in manifest weight, unlike sufficiency, a reversal can only come after sufficiency has already been proved. The state must have presented sufficient evidence to support the conviction and satisfied its burden of persuasion to the finder of fact. In this case, the finder of fact was the trial court. Weight is not a question of mathematics, but depends on the effects of inducing belief. That is why this court has repeatedly, in Tompkins and other situations, stated that a reversal for manifest weight is reserved for the extraordinary case. Now, this court has, relying on statute and precedent, historically refused to review manifest weight, substantive manifest weight claims outside of a capital case. I did not attempt to appeal substantively whether or not Ms. Phipps's conviction was supported by the manifest weight of the evidence. I believe, however, that it was. If we turn then to the law as it exists in Ohio, we should start with the Ohio Constitution, because the Ohio Constitution itself recognizes the limited review appellate courts should have for manifest weight. In Article 4, Section 3B2, appellate courts are granted the jurisdiction, as may be provided by law, to affirm, reverse, or modify. However, in Article 4, Section 3B3, this court in Tompkins noted acted as a clear limitation on the power of the Court of Appeals. It requires unanimous reversal by the Court of Appeals when a jury has heard the case. There is no unanimous requirement. The courts have held that there is no unanimous requirement in a criminal case for a bench trial. That being said, Tompkins itself, as I mentioned, noted that this article is a clear limitation on the Court of Appeals. Turning to the General Assembly, we have another limitation on manifest weight. In Revised Code 2321.18, the Ohio General Assembly saw fit to say that a reviewing court can only reverse for manifest weight once. This court and others have applied that. I have cited some of them in my brief. And the reason for this is going back to what I said earlier, because this is in the province of the finder of fact. This court has noted that if a court finds a judgment is against the weight of the evidence and were to enter a judgment contrary to the verdict of the jury, such action amounts to a substitution of the finding of the court for that of the jury and is erroneous. Turning next to the Ohio Appellate Rules, which are of course promulgated by this court, Ohio Appellate Rule 12C addresses manifest weight specifically, but it only does so with respect to civil cases. So in Appellate Rule 12C, if a civil case is heard by a bench trial, then a reviewing court can reweigh the evidence and reach a different outcome. Even in a civil case, that is not an available remedy if there was a jury trial. But notably, there is no distinction in Appellate Rule 12 for bench or jury trials in a criminal case. That would then have a criminal case governed by Appellate Rule 12D, which is the all other cases catch-all provision, which would require the remand that should have been ordered in this case. And finally, turning to this court's own precedent, I don't think it's necessary for this court to look much further than State versus Robinson, which has been cited both in my brief and in the amicus brief. In that case, this court was initially asked to review a sufficiency determination, and this court reversed the lower court, finding that there was sufficient evidence of a murder conviction. The lower court then, on remand, vacated, but this time based on manifest weight, and they vacated, but not just to remand for a new trial, they vacated and modified the conviction from murder to a manslaughter. Robinson then came back again to this court, and when the case came back again, this court said the only remedy that the lower court could have applied was a new trial.
Counsel, your friends on the other side argue that, you know, the problem really was that the Court of Appeals raised the issue sua sponte, and they didn't allow for briefing, and so really, rather than remanding back to, and so they concede there was an error there, and so that means we should just remand to the 8th District as opposed to the trial court. Can you respond to that specific point?
I don't think that's what happens. If you look at the 8th District opinion, Your Honor, there are multiple. First of all, there's no discussion of the sufficiency standard of review in the FIPS opinion. The court then goes on to say, I think at least at two points within the opinion, we find that Phipps's conviction is not supported by the manifest weight of the evidence. And then it goes on to cite its own precedent as a reason why they can modify a conviction following a manifest weight reversal. And I would further note that when I filed an application for reconsideration to the 8th District and suggested that it looked like there might have been some sufficiency evaluation, I noted, of course, that the appellant had not raised a sufficiency challenge. Their response was to say, no, absolutely not. It was only addressed on manifest weight, and to review on sufficiency would have been irrelevant. So the position that they are taking now before this court, that there was some sua sponte sufficiency analysis, is inconsistent with the position that they took at the 8th District, but it's also, I think, entirely inconsistent with what the 8th District's opinion said. You know, and turning back to the reason that there's deference to the finders of fact and the reason that we have the remedy of the new trial and that the remedy should be in the new trial is if this court looks at page 15 of the trial transcripts in this case, the prosecutor was asking the victim, who was a state trooper, she was asking the victim questions about how the assault occurred, how in his perspective, what had happened. And it's clear based on the record, if you look at that page, that the trooper was physically moving and he was making physical attempts to show the trial court what he meant. He wasn't just talking. Those are things that a trial court judge sees that the Court of Appeals will never get to see. That's not something on the record. And to make a credibility determination and reversal in this case on that record, that's one thing, and like I said, I haven't appealed it, but I think that's why the court and the assembly and the Constitution recognize that that's something within the province of the finder of fact, and that's something that should go back for a new trial. I think, unless this court has any questions, I will give the remainder of my time to the Attorney General's office.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Shyam Sirji for the Attorney General and in support of the state. The 8th District's decision was not just wrong, it was clearly wrong. So wrong, in fact, that Phipps doesn't seriously defend it. Instead, Phipps contends that the case should be remanded back to the 8th District because, according to Phipps, that court decided the case based on an issue that was never briefed or argued about in that court. The problem, however, is that Phipps's contention doesn't survive the slightest scrutiny of the lower court's opinion, which correctly identified the sole issue before it, articulated, at least in part of the opinion, the correct legal standard, yet simply and undisputably erred when it concluded that the remedy, based on its analysis of the manifest weight of the evidence, was to modify Phipps's conviction. But as the state has pointed out, the sole remedy available to an appellate court once it concludes that a criminal conviction is against the manifest weight of the evidence is to remand that case back down to the trial court and order a new trial. That's what Appellate Rule 12 says. That's what decades of this court's precedent say. But that's not what happened here. So this court should not just reverse the lower court's judgment, although it should certainly do that, but our respectful submission to you today is that it ought to seriously consider using this case as a vehicle to announce its intention to adopt a more aggressive approach to summarily reversing erroneous lower court decisions. Now, to be sure, it is not, of course, the primary function of this court to correct lower court errors, nor is it the role of the United States Supreme Court to do that, although it takes a vastly more aggressive approach to correcting lower court errors than this court. Nevertheless, there are some errors, and we submit this case presents one, that are so clear, so obvious, so egregious, that it calls upon high courts to step in and correct those errors in order to maintain their place on top of the court system of their respective jurisdictions.
Counsel, even if we agreed with you, why would we announce it?
I think announcing it, Your Honor, provides notice to both the litigants and the courts that this is what could happen if they willfully disregard controlling decisions of this court. In doing so, it will prevent further cases like this from coming before this court and further errors from being committed. So just to sort of provide some context, as I said, the United States Supreme Court does adopt a more aggressive approach to summary reversals than this court does. You know, in the last 14 terms, they have summarily reversed about 100 cases, which comes out to about 8 cases per year. In contrast, this court has only summarily reversed a handful of cases over the same amount of time. But as this case itself demonstrates, even state intermediate appellate courts sometimes commit clear errors that call upon this court to step in and remedy them. So I think at the very least, this court should consider announcing its intent to adopt such an approach in this case. And I would be remiss, of course, if I didn't mention that it already has the means to do so. Rule 7.08b3 explicitly states that when considering a memorandum in support of jurisdiction, the court has the option of accepting the appeal and entering judgment summarily. Of course, it's too late to apply that rule in this case, but going forward, it should announce its intent to do so, and in doing so, it will properly signal to lower courts that if they willfully disregard the precedents of this court and its rules, they risk reversal. If there are no questions for me, Your Honor, then we'll reserve the balance of our time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. Frank Cavallo for Sharon Phipps. Well, Your Honors, as Justice French noted earlier, we concede that the decision of the 8th District is incorrect, at least to some degree. And the only question really remaining then is what is the proper remedy that this court should fashion? Justice French cut right to the heart of it already. The 8th District said they were engaging in a manifest weight reversal, and that's what we asked for. And quite honestly, what my friends on the other side are asking you to do is to return the case to the trial court, reversed and remanded, consistent with a manifest weight reversal, which is what I asked the 8th District to do originally to begin with. However, given what the 8th District actually did here, it bears taking a look to see if something else needs to be done now, because what the 8th District did conflicts a little bit with what the 8th District said.
And Counsel, would you agree with Ms. Mullins? I'm over here.
I'm sorry.
Do you agree with Ms. Mullins' description of what the 8th District described its actions as in the decision on reconsideration, where they said, no, that's what we meant. It's manifest weight.
I do disagree to some degree, to some extent there. The 8th District defended their decision, and it's true that that's what they said.
They didn't mean it?
No, I just think they're wrong, quite honestly, Your Honor. If you look at the language of their decision, what the 8th District says that they're doing is they're looking at whether there was essentially, they don't say it, but they're looking at whether there was sufficient evidence under the intent, the mens rea element of the assault statute. And essentially they're saying, I think it's in paragraph 10 of their analysis.
Well, let me ask you about that, counsel. So the majority was looking at a record in which the officer testified that the defendant kicked intentionally. And however, the victim didn't agree with that or say, you know, if it was unintentionally. She denied she did anything of that nature. So the trial court had two conflicting testimonial evidence. They applied the State v. Bridgman, whether reasonable jurors looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state could differ as to whether the state had produced evidence meeting each and every element of the charge, and let it go to the jury. Why do we need to send this back based on those facts for a sufficiency argument?
Well, one brief correction, I believe, Your Honor, it was a bench trial. So I think the judge conducted that analysis.
All right, but let it go to, you know, let it proceed to the defense then. Thank
right.
you. For
that. Well, you know, that's how we viewed it as well, and that's how we argued it in the 8th District. So what I'm saying is, you know, you could just simply do that and just send it back, and that's what we asked for originally.
At the Rule 29 at the trial court, did you argue that the elements had not been met sufficiently met or articulate that in your Rule 29 motion?
I wasn't trial counsel. That's an excellent question. I don't have that kind of, unfortunately, that sort of encyclopedic recall of the transcript, I'm afraid, Your Honor. I don't know, is the short answer. All I'm really saying to Your Honors this morning is the 8th District appears to have been concerned with whether there was sufficient evidence of the mens rea element here, and their analysis of it reads like a sufficiency discussion. And if you believe that that's the case, you don't have to believe me, but if you believe that that's the case, then what should probably be done, and this case is this court's decisions in State versus Tate and a number of cases going back at least to 1974 say that when a court of appeals raises an issue sua sponte, the proper thing to do is to give both parties the opportunity to brief the issue and argue the point and have a full discussion on whether, in fact, that issue is, in fact, correct. Maybe it's not.
Counsel, let me ask it a little differently. You invited the manifest weight analysis, correct?
I asked for it, yeah.
I know. Yeah. So aren't you a little in a bad position to be asking us to ignore that?
No, I'm not asking you to ignore it at all. What I said originally was you could send the case back, reversed and remanded for a new trial, and that's what I asked for originally. I mean, how could I complain about that? That's what I asked for.
But now you're asking us to really send it back to the 8th District on
well,
the sufficiency
I'm saying that option exists for you because of something that I didn't ask the court to do, but because of something that the 8th District did in order to be consistent with this court's decisions in other cases.
So which are you asking us, bottom line?
Well, bottom line, I think if you believe, and I believe having read the 8th District's decision, that they're raising a sufficiency point. Okay. So my contention is that having the 8th District having raised a point that I didn't raise, the proper remedy there is to give both parties an opportunity to fully brief and argue that point.
Counsel, why would you look for the sufficiency of intent when the defense was didn't happen, didn't do it? So intent is irrelevant. So why is that? Why are we talking about that?
Well, that's a point that would conceivably be discussed in a full sufficiency argument if that had ever taken place, at the lower, in the 8th District. That argument wasn't conducted. Nobody took one side or the other and had that discussion.
Well,
so you may be right, Your Honor.
Justice Stewart, in her dissent, states it out plainly.
I think she says her colleagues are wrong. I think, and that they're doing their analysis is
but
incorrect. And,
because
yeah.
of the fact that your client denied she kicked anyone.
Right.
So intent is irrelevant here. And it's a creation of the 8th District. And the trial judge heard the trooper, heard the witnesses, and heard the defense, and said, she did it. The trooper's credible, and here's her, she's found guilty, et cetera. Why don't we just send it back to the trial court and reinstate the trial court?
You could. There's nothing barring you from doing that. Like I said, that's what I asked for.
No, reinstate the trial court's verdict.
Well, because then I think then you're stepping beyond, they're not even asking you to do that. That's not what's even, we're not discussing
well, obviously
substantively.
Obviously, the district's doing things that they're not asked to do.
Maybe we
can do the same thing.
Well, that's far beyond the scope of what I can potentially argue here for you, Judge. I think the point, though, that you're raising, I think, is it's a procedural question, really. What's the proper remedy to be handled at this point? And we're kind of past the substantive discussion of what the evidence is. The only way that the substantive discussion of the evidence is relevant is to even get to whether or not the 8th District did what I'm trying to convince you that they did, which is engage in a sufficiency analysis under the sort of the guise of a manifest weight discussion. That's what I think they did here. That's what I think their analysis shows. Justice Stewart thought they were wrong. You might think they're wrong. It's not what I asked for. It's not what we were arguing, but that's what they did. So if you agree with me that that's what they did, then That probably calls for further briefing and further discussion. If you disagree with me, then I would ask you to send it back consistent with the manifest weight reversal and remanded for a new trial. There are no more questions, and thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't think it's any surprise why they want to take a second bite at a sufficiency review. It's because if they were successful under a sufficiency review, it would result in acquittal. Here, where they were unsuccessful in a manifest weight review, they get a new trial. This is why they want it to go back for the analysis that they think that the 8th District would give them if it were to remand to the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, this went to an en banc proceeding.
It did.
After it did, and it was a divided court?
It was, Your Honor.
And why do you think is this a constant source of frustration for the, do you think there's just a confusion among the 8th District on when to apply the proper analysis manifest, and they could use some guidance from this court?
I think that's part of it, Your Honor. I think what happens, so if this court looks at the decisions that the majority in FIPS cited to for its ability to modify following a manifest weight reversal, those decisions come from cases, specifically kidnapping cases, actually, but those decisions come from cases where there was an affirmative defense. So in kidnapping, if the defendant can put forth an affirmative defense to show that a felony one kidnapping should be reduced to a felony two because the victim was left in a safe place unharmed. And there's other instances, of course, so if there's, you know, if there was self-defense, an affirmative defense of self-defense, those are traditionally reviewed under a manifest weight analysis, because when you have an affirmative defense, you're conceding that there's sufficiency. You're just saying why there shouldn't be culpability. And I think that's where the confusion came in from this case. I think it was a misapplication of the precedent from affirmative defenses. But even where you have an affirmative defense reversal following manifest weight, which we've had those from the 8th District as well in a self-defense, I think in a felonious assault case, the 8th District has, at least on some of those occasions, said, okay, we find that the defendant acted in self-defense, we're remanding to the trial court rather than modifying the conviction. So I'm not exactly sure why they took the modification step. I know a couple of cases from the 8th District, Dove, and some of the other ones that I cited have. That does seem to be a faulty analysis on their part, and I think that might be part of the reason that you have that 6-6 split, is because some of them are maybe looking at it in terms of what they do for the affirmative defense cases. But the fact that they have the 6-6 split in the en banc court shows exactly why we need this court to issue an opinion on this case, because not only has
What do you want the bottom line of that opinion?
We want the bottom line of that opinion to be, should a reviewing court reverse for manifest weight, the only remedy available is to remand for a new trial. I think it's a clear, bright-line rule that can be applied regardless if you think there's a credibility determination or if you think that there's an affirmative defense that applies. I think that's in keeping with the Constitution, the General Assembly, and the precedent from this court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.